Ulele uale ule ulelei. Uale ulele uale ule ulelei.
Welcome to the Wild Mother Podcast for women who want to birth, mother, and live with pleasure, purpose, and power. The wisdom of Mother Nature is our guide as we dive deep into the subjects of physiologic birth, natural parenting, and conscious mothering. Join me, Dr. Jessica Hodgins, for evidence-based and soul-centered conversation with guest experts and real mamas just like you. Let's go. Welcome to the Wild Mother Podcast. Guys, I know I say this about basically every episode, but the conversation I'm bringing you today really is a very special one because today I'm in conversation with mother, doula, herbalist and activist, Julie Bell. Now, if you're a home birthing mama in Australia, chances are you know exactly who Julie is. And you've probably even used her beautiful herbs. I feel like placing an order with Julie's business, Blissful Herbs, is almost an essential part of preparing for a home birth here in Australia. And if you haven't come across Julie and her beautiful work yet, you are in for a real treat with today's episode. Julie is the heart behind Blissful Herbs, which has become a household name across Australia for providing nurturing herbal teas, bath herbs, salves, and tinctures for people who love natural living and the healing gifts of nature. After training as a registered nurse and working for a decade and a half as a volunteer Christian humanitarian worker in Asia, Julie returned to Australia. Having experienced four glorious home births of her own along the way, Julie arrived fired up with a passion to serve birthing families and to support women in reclaiming their own birthright and birth power. She completed her doula training in 2005 and since then has served hundreds of families in her capacity as birth and postnatal doula. As a birthrights passionista, Julie has also been at the forefront of activism to retain and reclaim birthing rights and choices in Australia and globally. Now, I already knew I would love speaking with Julie based purely on the work that she offers in the world and the beautiful stories and images that she shares through her social media platforms. But even knowing this, I was really struck in our conversation by her tender-hearted love of women, birth, and the earth, and her fiery courage and willingness to stand in her truth and to go straight to the heart of some really important issues. So she brought me to tears on a number of occasions in this conversation in the most beautiful way. In today's episode, Julie and I talk about Julie's childhood experience of trauma and disruption and how that experience led her on a path towards and shaped her work as a herbalist and doula. We talk about the wisdom and kindness of plants and how so many plants offer support and healing, especially to women and women's needs. We talk about the history of misogyny and racism that continues to undermine women's birthing choices and how women will always intuitively come back to birthing our babies at home in safety. We talk about the importance of sharing candid stories and images of birth as well as other aspects of the experience of being a woman and how Julie's refusal to accept Instagram's community standards led to her account being penalized, and why this isn't just about a few pictures, but about creating spaces for women to see themselves and their daily lived experiences reflected back to them, to honor women's stories and to create new narratives. We also talk about the relationship between spirituality and motherhood, and the role that Julie's Christian faith plays in her life, her work, and her service to the world, and so much more. If you enjoy today's episode, it would mean the world to me if you went over to iTunes and left a review, because that is what helps to get this podcast in front of other wild women who could also benefit from these conversations. And you can also share the podcast with other mamas just by taking a screenshot and sharing it over on Instagram. And don't forget to tag me at Dr. Jessica Hodgins. This is a really wide-ranging conversation. It spans politics, philosophy, spirituality, and I would expect nothing less of the legendary Julie Bell. So let's jump into this beautiful, tender-hearted, fiery conversation, mamas. So, Julie, welcome to the Wild Mother podcast, and thank you for taking the time to chat with me. I was so excited to talk to you because I feel like you've kind of been part of my own journey into motherhood, because I had my little boy, Ned, at home 2 years ago, and I had like all of your beautiful herbs kind of supported me through my pregnancy and early postpartum as well, all those beautiful bath herbs that you have. So it's so lovely to get to talk to you face to face.
Oh, that's so lovely to hear.
And I'd just like to start by getting you to tell us a little bit about the work that you do in the world and the journey that's led you to this work, because you've had such an interesting journey and the work that you do and that you offer to the world is so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I really loved the questions that you sent me, Jessica, and I found them really thought-provoking. And I started to think more deeply in like just the words that you chose when you say, tell us about your work in the world. Mm. And the journey that led you to this work. And the simple answer is, oh, I left school, you know, did some nurses training, went overseas, did some volunteer work, came back, trained as a doula, trained as a herbalist. But there's another story there. And I thought, you know, I don't think I've actually ever put this story out in the public space. Mm-hmm. And I thought I would, because I feel like there's going to be loads of other people out there who are going to be able to relate to this. Mm-hmm. And the real answer is, what drew me to this work and the person that I am today is actually trauma. Mm. So as a very young child, my parents, first of all, we moved from Australia to New Zealand. So there was a dislocation there, and my mm-hmm. parents got divorced, and my brother, my older brother, did not cope. And he became very violent. And so I grew up with a lot of abuse and trauma and chaos. Mm. When I was still quite young, I had the sense that I am too fragile for this world. And I was struggling with that. So I was a very tense and anxious child dealing with a lot of stress. And the sense that I had is I now know that I'm on the spectrum and incredibly empathetic, which mm-hmm. explains a great deal. But it was as if I see and I know and I feel and I say too much. Mm. And this was constantly getting me into trouble. Of course, now these wounds have become my superpowers pretty much. And what I've learned, you know, I want to speak to anybody out there who is feeling overwhelmed with the damage that they've incurred and feeling that they are messed up and that there isn't any hope. And even when you look around the world today and we're dealing with a lot of stress and chaos and trauma at the moment, I want to encourage people that healing is available. Mm. And there are so many therapeutic healing forces out there, benevolent forces. And I want to encourage you to look for that when you're really hurting and you really feel like giving up. And this has been my journey. Mm. Coming, dealing with generational stuff, all kinds of stuff, you know, pretty much the standard human experience. Mm. You know, I can say I'm a card-carrying member of the human race because I have experienced these things. And I remember growing up and talking to my siblings. So what happened is my older brother ended up dying of AIDS. Oh. And my youngest brother developed schizophrenia when I was a teenager, and he later disappeared and no trace of him was ever found.
Oh, God.
So these are, you know, these are real things. And I remember talking to my brother and he just bluntly said, our family is an effing disaster. He's just speaking out of the raw pain of his heart. Mm. And I began to realize, you know what, our family's actually pretty damn typical.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I looked around and I thought, no, this is the human story. Mm. You know, human pain is real. But so is human healing and so is human comfort. So there's that saying from Fred Rogers, I believe, in a disaster, look for the helpers. Mm. So what I would want to say to that is like, not only that, but look for the helping dynamics as well, because you have those resources within you and there's people and systems around you that have those therapeutic dynamics as well. Mm. So I remember reading this book, Women Who Run With the Wolves, mm-hmm. and it's the kind of book I recommend. Do not try to read it cover to cover, but have it on your nightstand and just kind of dip into it, read a little, chew it over, and then just set it aside again because it's so deep it's really hard to kind of absorb.
Yeah.
And there was something in there that sort of piqued my imagination. looking for those, again, those healing dynamics. And what I saw was the power of story or narrative, the power of empathetic listening, and that is a deep hearing and bearing witness. And how many times in my life I've had people say, you're the first person I've ever told this to, and you're the first person who's ever believed me, that kind of thing. The healing power of music, which touches us at a really deep level, the healing power of nature and of birth and of connection. So we live in a society that I say is sick with separation and dislocation, and healing authentic connection brings about a reintegration, which brings about healing. And then it would be normal that I would then become a herbalist, because I say that herbs are our helpers. They are there to help. They exist to help the human condition. So one of the things that we have learned about the hormone oxytocin is that there are oxytocin receptors in the gut. And when they were doing some studies on people with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, they found that if they combined gut healing regimes with psychotherapy and group therapy and all of the things that were more, you know, targeting the actual trauma, they got much better results, because as the gut lining actually healed, it meant that when oxytocin-rich activities were applied, the people were actually able to receive love. And I thought, okay, that is really interesting. And then the role of epigenetics and generational healing is massive as well. So I'm one of those like deeply intuitive people. I feel in my body the story of my forebears and ancestors. And when I was a child, I just thought I was a weirdo. But I've spoken to enough people now that that's a thing. And now we even have, we have terminology for it now. We talk about epigenetics. We talk about intergenerational trauma. But when I was a child and a teenager, I really felt that there was nobody who understood what I was talking about. And I felt ashamed for having this knowledge and this perspective. So it's been really interesting to see the child that I was when I was really, really hypersensitive to every little thing. And when you are one of those really sensitive empaths, you can spend a lot of time feeling like it is me that is wrong, instead of it is the world that needs healing. And I think that's why a lot of people with those sorts of backgrounds go into the healing professions. So that's a little bit of my story to how did I get to this work. That's different to just like the standard answer.
Yeah. And I think the way you answered that question says so much about you and your gifts and your way of seeing the world. So thank you for sharing that story, Julie, because it's, you know, one of the things you touched on was the healing power of story and of bearing witness to story. And I feel like so many people in so many different ways will listen to your experience and resonate with some aspect of it. So thank you for that beautiful, open, candid sharing.
Yeah. I also want to encourage people who are really in the trenches of parenting right now. And I remember, you know, before I became a parent, I used to write songs. I used to write poems. You know, I used to write a journal. And after I became a mother, I had zero time for any of that. I could not string a coherent sentence together. I used to imagine that if I was ever going to write a book about parenting, I would call it Wife. What? No, stop interrupting. You know, I felt like I couldn't do anything, say anything, or even think anything without an interruption. And I actually didn't really handle that very well for, you know, lots of myriad reasons. So at the moment, here I am, I can talk to you without interruption. My older children are perfectly independent. Even my 10-year-old is quietly just going through his schoolwork. He doesn't need me. And I think sometimes when you've got several young children, and they really need a lot from you, I just want to sort of encourage mothers, your day will come. Your day will come where your story is going to matter, and we will want to listen to your stories, and you'll have a story. And your story will be so valuable. And, you know, your story is important. And even if in the chaos of, you know, early childhood parenting, it's not possible to get that story down in a coherent way, your day will come.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to offer that encouragement.
And I appreciate that so much, because I think I've been really fortunate in my particular journey into parenthood so far, but like I have felt that too. I just want to come back to that phrase, bearing witness, because I think for a lot of us as mothers, we're doing what I think is actually the most important work in the world in raising the future generations of humanity, but it's mostly unwitnessed. And it's really hard to value what isn't witnessed. It's just us there. No one watches what we do every single day. And as you said, often we can't string a coherent thought together, and there's no time for us, but the work that we're doing in this moment matters so very much, and it deserves to be witnessed, and it isn't.
Yeah,
and it deserves to be acknowledged.
I really agree. And I think one of the things about birth and motherhood is that it demands connection in a society that seems to be hurtling in the opposite direction. And there's a saying, motherhood needs company. And, you know, we hear all of the stuff about, you know, it takes a village and stuff like that. You know, I wish that mothers in particular, fathers too, but especially mothers, or whoever is the at-home parent, really, we're a heck of a lot better supported than our culture currently provides for. But I think that's really important. I know that for myself, I feel like I would have coped a lot better if I'd had somebody who was even just seeing me and just cheering me on. And that kind of leads to your later question about representation on social media. So we might pick that up again when we get to that point.
Yeah, sure. That sounds great. Julie, you've offered this beautiful story of your journey to where you are. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, in the practical sense, like the work that you offer? Because you have so many beautiful offerings and skill sets that you do offer in service to women and families. So, like, what is it that you do for anyone? And I think most people listening will know exactly who Julie Bell is. but for anyone who's listening that doesn't, what it is that you do?
Yes. So I'm basically at heart a herbalist. So what I'm doing is learning herbs and letting herbs teach me and then bringing the benefits of those herbs so that other people can also love them, get to know them and experience their benefits. So, yeah, in a sentence, that's probably what I do. And in my birth work, I was just thinking about this last night, you know, whenever I speak with women about birth or have the privilege to attend them in birth, I really find that women are my teachers, and they, if you're capable of just going in with an open heart to just deeply listen, you'll learn so much from herbs and you'll learn so much from the women that you serve. And I think that kind of sums up the sort of herbalist that I am and the sort of doula that I am. And it comes from a place of, first of all, curiosity. An ongoing curiosity to stay open and to keep learning. And the other dynamic is a place of deep love and respect and wonderment for creation, for herbs and for birthing women.
So Julie, this leads me on to a question that I really wanted to ask you about the relationship between, so you're a herbalist, you also offer doula services, you're also a mother yourself, and about that relationship between what do herbs offer us as women, as mothers, as humans alive on the earth today in this time of, as you said, we're sick with disconnection and never more so than right now. And we're living in a time of environmental loss and grief. And what do plants offer us?
That's such a great question. And I look back over history and I realize that women in particular have always had this ancient instinct to nurture and to nourish. And it's something very simple. It's just a desire to comfort our loved ones and to help our loved ones feel better. I feel like herbs are kind and they know what they need and they give us what we need where we are. So I look at, I have a saying, I call them resilient weeds. And a lot of our most therapeutic herbs are actually considered weeds. So one of the things I love to do with people is to go out into their own garden, into their own, you know, wild places that are in the area where they live and actually go through and point out sometimes the most ordinary herbs. And sometimes they can be considered pests and they're just growing absolutely everywhere, but they're actually there for our benefit.
Mm.
And this has been the same down through the ages. And so there's this thing called ethnobotany. Here in Australia, there's a huge body of knowledge around indigenous herbs and indigenous plants. Where a weed or a herb thrives and you're in that environment too, it's like the herbs will lead the way and give you what you need to also thrive in that environment. So a lot of times, you know, if your environment that you're living in is showing a lot of stress because of, you know, everything that's going on, if the herb is thriving, chances are it has a whole bunch of antioxidants there for you, and it will have nutrients and phytochemicals that will actually be of great benefit to you. So I'll give you a classic example. There were explorers and expeditionists who would be going into some of the really wild and remote areas of northern China and Russia, and they would have to travel for many days to find food. So they would go on an expedition to, you know, find animals. So this was survival, a subsistence sort of type living. And in those wild and rugged, sometimes quite sort of steppe type places, there were these little bright red berries called Schizandra berries. And the hunters knew that if they ate the berries from those bushes, they would get strength and power and stamina to continue with their rugged journey. So Schizandra in China is called the five taste fruit. And it is an incredible herb that helps your liver, improves mental and physical functioning, improves strength and stamina, reduces fatigue, nourishes the nervous system, helps you sleep better, gives you strength when you've just had it and can't continue. It does like so many things. And you know what? It also, amazingly, just happens to act on the uterus, and it strengthens and lengthens uterine contractions, as well as giving you a sense of, you know, a fresh wind. What's the word?
Like a second wind kind of thing.
A second wind. Thank you. That's the word. I'm swapping between languages in my head and getting confused. Yeah, so it is amazing. So that's why I use Schizandra in my birth boost tincture, because as well as strengthening, supporting the uterus to do its work more effectively, it actually gives you a sense of stamina and a sense of, yes, I can go on now.
Mm.
So that's an example of a herb that provides itself right where you are. And another one would be dandelion.
Mm-hmm.
Dandelion is such a resilient herb, and it will grow in every little nook and crack in the pavement and just about every backyard, and every part of the herb from the top to the bottom, overground and underground, is useful for human well-being. So if you do have dandelions springing up in your garden, I encourage you to go and pick those beautiful bright red sunny flowers and the aerial leaves, and put them all in a nice clean jar and fill your jar up with honey and let the honey sit for 4 or 6 weeks. Then you'll have a herbal honey, a dandelion honey, which tastes amazing, but it's also brilliant for sore throats, just general well-being, those wonderful, very, very nutrient rich, got lots of vitamins and minerals, and has all of those amazing antioxidants as well.
Wow.
And dandelion is your ultimate liver herb. So as dandelion comes up and shines its beautiful sunny face in the springtime, and that's a really great time to just sort of do some liver support. It's a wonderful liver herb. So is the root as well. So you can dig up the roots and wash them and then just slow dry them and then chop them up and keep them in a jar. And you can even grind them down to make a sort of coffee adjunct. Yeah, so I just love that. Wherever I am, I actually go looking to see what the herbs are.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to imagine, what is it? Why are these herbs here?
Mm.
What are they providing? And what are they here to teach us?
That's so profound. I think just that thought in itself, the wisdom of the plant, like it's not an accident that it's here, and it's not an accident that dandelion, for example, has all these beautiful bright green leaves in spring, right when we might need kind of boost. They're just the wisdom of the herbs. And you brought me to tears when you said that simple sentence, herbs are kind.
Yeah.
And they're our friends.
Yeah. And I think we really need those kinds of reminders when we're trying so hard to be resilient to all of these massive stresses that are coming in layers all around us. And, you know, you mentioned earth grief as well, about the loss of the environment and the effects on human well-being as a result. And these are really serious issues. And so that awareness of the kindness that herbs offer has been an amazing kind of comfort to me and a revelation. Mm. And the other thing that I've noticed is, as I look at like the ancient herbalists who were very often the village midwives as well, there's always been this interplay between helping women in their birthing and their mothering and herb knowledge.
Mm.
And it's incredible to me that so many herbs are special friends for women. Mm. And it's as if a zillion herbs have been created purely to make the journey of life easier, particularly for women.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's fabulous male herbs as well, but I guess my focus is on herbs for women because of my work.
Yeah.
And so an example is, I've noticed that all of the herbs that we use as galactagogues, so these are the herbs that will boost and replenish milk supply,
mm-hmm.
almost all of them are also carminative gut herbs. So they're gut healing herbs, and they almost all of them also have a nervous system support benefit as well.
Mm.
So it's as if these herbs that are helping you with your milk supply understand that when you're a breastfeeding mother, you can be dealing with stress, mm-hmm. and that stress could be affecting your gut health. And that stress, if you have too much stress and it's unmanageable, that could actually reduce your milk supply. So these herbs come along and they say, right, I'm going to help heal your gut. I'm going to help calm and soothe your nervous system, and I'm going to help boost your milk supply all at the same time. There's so many little like connections like that when you look into the herbs and their different actions and the provisions that they make. And yeah, that's definitely why I came to think herbs are there as a special support system to help you through the journey of life.
Mm.
And yeah, it's given me such an appreciation for them. And I love the work that I do, because when I get the feedback from my customers and they have truly felt loved and supported, then I'm less like, there's the herbs doing their beautiful work once again. And I actually get quite overwhelmed sometimes because of how effective they are. Because, you know, obviously herbs are, you know, very gentle and very subtle
mm-hmm.
in their energetics, and the improvement is gradual over a matter of weeks and months. It's not an instant, you know, fix. And I definitely think there is a place for pharmaceuticals. I'm glad that we have some good medicines for various things. There is a place for antibiotics at times. But herbs are not so much about medical treatment. Herbs are about wellness.
Mm.
Herbs are about supporting optimal function of cells and organs. And herbs are about supporting you systemically rather than in that sort of, you know, more reductive sense.
Yes, exactly. And those examples that you were giving of those galactagogue herbs also, you know, supporting gut health and, you know, nervous system regulation. Like, it's such an amazing example of that, because it actually makes me really emotional. There's so much that I kind of, that's coming up for me as you're saying all this, that I just wanted to reflect on.
Wow. And
really, it's the wisdom of these plants. And that's the kind of divine wisdom of Mother Nature, really, isn't it? Because, of course, if we value life and the natural world, life is at the center of everything. Of course, life wants life to thrive. And
that's
women
right.
are the center of our, you know, of our communities. And I really believe that humans, as much as we've done incredible environmental damage, I think we are also meant to live in relationship with the natural world and to be stewards of the natural world. We are the natural world. And so, of course, the plants want human communities to thrive. And so to me, it makes so much sense, but it's so touching to hear it.
That's wonderful. About. You've just said that so well. That's amazing. And, you know, I feel like when you use herbs, it's not a matter of obtaining them and consuming them for your own benefit. It's actually there's a synergy there. There's a symbiotic relationship. Mm. And I feel like herbs teach us to walk lightly on the earth.
Mm.
You need a light touch with herbs. There has to be a mutual respect rather than just sort of like this rapacious consuming. Mm. So when you grow herbs and work with herbs, dry herbs, distill herbs, everything that you do with herbs, it won't work unless you have respect and unless you have a light touch. And herbs are prolific. You know, where I grow, I'm fortunate to be in a mountain area with lots of trees and lots of rain, amazing rich soil. And there are certain herbs that just go berserk. They just grow everywhere. And then there's other herbs that are a little bit more fragile in this climate and environment. And the combination of them, they do compel you. It's a bit like relationships. If you go at relationships like a bull in a china shop, they will not work. And it's the same with herbs. They teach us to have a respect for the natural environment and the natural world and to walk lightly on the earth.
It's so beautiful. And this, I think, actually links in really beautifully with your work as a doula, because I think birthing women are kind of the same. Again, walk into a birthing woman's space, as you said, like a bull in a china shop, it requires walking lightly and with absolute respect for the innate wisdom of the birthing woman.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think in both those examples, you learn not to center yourself, but to simply stand back and observe and bear witness and, you know, be open to receive, rather than to have that sort of that dichotomy of like, I am the helper, you are the helpee. And it's not like that at birth, is it? You sort of go there, and I very much, my way of being at birth has really changed. So in the early days, you know, I was just trying to do all of the things and rapidly learned that less is more. And that attending and bearing witness was probably the most profound thing that I could do, and that women would instruct me and teach me if there is anything that they needed. So while I do think that it's very helpful to learn the various sort of making space techniques, spinning babies techniques, the majority of the time, none of the above is necessary. What is more necessary is to support women in sinking deeply into their own wisdom. And being free to follow the demands and the dictates of their own body, to have to listen to their own body and just move intuitively and instinctively, and to see that and acknowledge it and support it. And then women will become very wild at birth. And I love to see that. So, yeah, I'm really about, you know, in my little description of who I am, I say something about like a, you know, wild heart herbalist and a wild woman doula. And there's a little bit of truth in that. You know, it's not just a, you know, a tagline, but I look to see wildness to me as health. So wildness in nature, and that ability to let go of social constraints and to find that wildness when you're in birth, and feeling free and respected and supported to do that, I think is really, really helpful at birth.
And I'd love to hear you reflect on your experiences of the birth world in general, Julie, because so for me, this is really new. Like, this is a new passion that I've only really kind of entered into in the last 2 years, since I had my own little boy at home and became very passionate about physiological birth and home birth. And I know a lot of the services that you offer are home birth services, but as someone who's been in the birth world for 15 years or so, I think, I'd just love to hear you reflect on what have you noticed change in the state of birth and how birth is managed, and I'm putting managed in inverted commas here. What are your observations and reflections of what's happened and what needs to happen that you think?
Yeah, there is an incredible history. So I feel like there's some books that still need to be written about how did we end up here, particularly in if we just even just focus on Australia. But there was a book that was written, it's called Witches, Midwives and Nurses, A History of Women Healers by Barbara Iron Rich and Deirdre English. And that was, it was published by the Feminist Press back, I think it was in the 1970s. And I've been vaguely aware of this book sort of out there in the ether. So there's that book, and there was, which basically talked about the institutionalization of women's healing skills and the way that that was kind of co-opted to fit the patriarchal model. So there's that sort of viewpoint. And then there was this thing at the turn of the century called the Flexner Report. Now, this was in North America. And this was funded by the Rockefellers and some other like massive sort of organizations. And in 80 days, this guy went around America and took stock of medical education and midwifery education in North America. And basically, he was trying to get rid of the quacks. And he was trying to make things more official and more professional, and the idea would be therefore more safe.
Mm.
However, he had no insight whatsoever into just how sexist and just how racist his lens was.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much midwives were made illegal, pretty much. Homeopaths and naturopaths were made illegal.
Mm.
And probably the worst part was is that every African-American medical college was shut down, except for, I think, just one or two. And in reading the Flexner report, it became very clear to me that this guy's sexism ever so slightly outnudged his racism. But and so what he was setting up is that medical power would and medical hierarchy would be owned and controlled by white men.
Mm.
And all of the diversity was lost. So even though we want to support, evidence-based care, it is incredibly sad that as a result of the Flexner report, things changed on an institutional level in America that really they lost an incredible amount of diversity and knowledge and story from other cultures, including from women's culture.
Mm.
And then, of course, all around the world that has been copied. And so I still see the repercussions of those decisions right here in Australia today. Connection is so important. It's so obvious to me that one woman, one midwife continuity of care yields the better results and is the gold standard for birthing. Why are we dealing with the closing down of smaller institutions and the herding of women into larger institutions? And why are we dealing with legal and insurance issues that stop women from anyone to be able to offer broader birthing choices for the Australian consumer?
Yeah.
So it ends up that instead of natural birth being the norm and obstetrically managed birth being available for when it's necessary, everything gets swapped around where obstetrically managed birth is the norm and only a few fringe-dwelling tree huggers, out there on the fringe, in the margins, can actually access a fair chance at a normal birth. And I'm pretty passionate about that because I see a real injustice in that. The other thing that I just feel is just wrong is the way that our professional independent midwives are unsupported.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have proper professional protection. They don't have proper insurance protection. They aren't properly funded. They aren't properly resourced. They don't have right of transfer to continue with practicing rights when they need to transfer into hospital with a woman.
Mm.
There are so many ways that we could make home birth better, safer, and more affordable.
Mm.
If we were really so concerned about safety,
yes,
by supporting our independent midwives instead of picking them off and trying to make non-obstetric birth choices harder and harder for women to access.
Yeah.
And the more that the more inaccessible these birth choices are, the more afraid women are because they're less likely to have ever come across somebody who's actually had a home birth or a free birth. And so this has been a really frustrating thing. But I don't feel hopeless because you'll never be able to stop women from wishing to access what is our deep knowing and our deep instinct in our actual bodies.
Mm.
So a couple of options that I look at is that for many women, what can they possibly do other than free birth?
Mm.
And, if they've been coerced into that because of the shutdown of so many other options, then we need to organize excellent free birth education and empower women to do that the best that they can.
Yeah.
The other option that I see occurring in some places is the idea of a birth house.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a home birth away from home type setting where you go to the home independent midwives instead of the independent midwives coming to you. And especially if that birth house has some kind of a a good connection and a good rapport with a local hospital or a particular obstetrician. So, you know, I would really love to see obstetricians who are comfortable to occupy that space, to actually stand and to work in a, you know, supportive relationship with midwives offering either home birth services or birth house services. Mm-hmm. We've lost so many birth centers and family birth centers. Everything's just been snaffled up into the obstetric system. So when I see these alternatives cropping up, I'm like, that's a good thing. Like the latest I heard is that a birth center is being started up in Bendigo soon.
Which is my kind of where I'm from originally. And I'm actually from just outside of Bendigo, but that's kind of my nearest hometown to where I grew up. Wow. And so I'm also very excited to see that because my sister lives there who's not yet, you know, like ready to have children, but at one stage will. And just for her to have alternatives. And isn't it like these are always kind of they're grassroots initiatives. They're not coming from the top down and they're not going to come from the top down. It's going to start at the grassroots.
Yeah, it's going to have to start with women demanding what they want and what they need for safe birthing.
Yeah.
And if we have to think outside the square and we have to work outside the system, either the system flexes to accommodate us or we are going to have to continue to arrange for natural birthing choices and options outside of the system. And, you know, I just look forward to cooperation and connection whenever and wherever that's possible.
Yeah.
But without it, we have to keep birth choices alive for women. Women will always go for this. It's just the way that we're wired. And it's on an intuitive level, we know that this is actually best and safest for us and for our babies.
Yes, exactly. Hey mama, what if I told you that the blueprint for birth is safety, ecstasy and transcendence, personal growth and intergenerational healing? What if I told you that this is true not just because it sounds nice, but because Mother Nature is infinitely wise? Life wants to thrive. That's why birth, the moment of passing life to a new generation, is exquisitely designed over millions of years of evolution to be as safe and efficient as possible for mother and baby, and to be an evolutionary opportunity for you as mother, as creatrix of life, to expand into your fullest potential so that the next generation is given the very best opportunity to thrive. And now, what if I told you that this blueprint isn't something mysterious or even hard to attain? What if I told you that actually it's your body's default? That it's right there in your body, in your cells, in your very DNA, like a gift, just waiting for you to claim it. If these words stir something in you, Mama, if you feel their truth ringing in your cells, then I want to invite you to join me for a very special free masterclass that I'll be hosting on Friday, the 24th of September. It's called Reclaiming the Sacred Blueprint for Birth. I'll be sharing the three codes that you can use to reclaim the safe, ecstatic, transcendent, expansive, healing birth that is your birthright and your baby's too. You'll find the link to register in the show notes. Go and do it right now before you forget. Yes, I see you multitasking, Mama. And join me for this sacred gathering. It's going to be something very special, and I can't wait to see you there. This is a thing I think that for a lot of women, it is an intuitive choice to birth, you know, at home. And I think, like, I'm a researcher by training, but most of the decision to birth at home was actually intuitive. I just knew I didn't want to be in a hospital. And yet all of the research is like the more and more that we have this research, it's supporting the choices that women are making intuitively. And this is the frustration that the intuition is there and the research is supporting that, but the structures of power have been arranged to make that inaccessible to women. And especially, and this is a big frustration of mine, like women who are most vulnerable to abuse in the hospital system. So like women of color and Aboriginal women and women of low socioeconomic status. Those are the women who are most vulnerable to abuse. Those are the women for whom home birth is the least accessible because of like both financial resources and education as well. Like you need to have a certain kind of level of like education to understand, I think, why you would birth at home and to be able to reject those cultural narratives and cultural fears that keep women in hospital.
Yeah. I think if we're going to have a profit before people exploitative capitalist model, that really, really does not serve people in so many ways. It doesn't serve us in education or in aged care or in mental health care or in disability care. And it certainly doesn't serve us in birth care either. Mm. And, you know, I'm tired of seeing birthing families basically just be fodder for a, you know, wag the dog type system. And I see that midwives working within that system also often feel, you know, really burnt out and really disillusioned because this is not what I trained for, that sort of thing. So I think it's really important for all of society health. It's like, I'm tired of just letting this particular capitalist model where the bottom line is the dollar, the bottom line is profit, dictate absolutely everything as if well-being is not as important as the GDP and is not, you know, why should that one measure be the measure of a successful nation or a successful society? And I think people are just bored and frustrated with that, you know. So it's really clear to me that women need to not only be clinically safe when they give birth, but they feel it on a deep, visceral level that they also have a right and need to feel psychologically safe and culturally safe and spiritually safe. And one of the things that I noticed with this whole idea of closing the gap between health in Australia and particularly Indigenous health is that it's almost as if like the Indigenous health trails along behind white Australia's health. It actually should be the other way around. And I think with birth that we're going to see that when we prioritize what is culturally safe, psychologically safe, safe for Indigenous communities, and we're providing birth services that are determined by them, created by them, curated by them, and governed by them, about this is the way to provide culturally appropriate and safe care to our people, they will lead the way in providing examples and opportunities for white Australia to follow. So I loved like Birth Time, that beautiful movie that's just come out, Birth Time. And they really touched on that in that movie. And I feel like instead of letting Indigenous health follow along behind, and so it just seems like it's quite patronizing to me, instead let Indigenous birthing and health lead the way and set the example. I think that's going to be a real sort of shift in the dynamics in this country. We're actually looking to them to be the leaders and to call the shots on this is how you provide safe care and culturally appropriate care for women, because that actually applies to us all. We actually all need cultural and spiritual safety when we give birth, and clinical safety is very important, of course, but it's not enough. And if we don't provide safety in these other aspects as well, it impinges on clinical safety and it undermines clinical safety. Yeah. So it's important. And I really believe that Aboriginal Australia can lead the way. I feel like they have the values and the wisdom to teach us.
Yeah, that's such an important reframing, isn't it? I think you're so right. Yeah, it's so condescending to be like, well, look, this is how we do it, so you should catch up to us, but the way we do it is actually pretty shit.
It's actually pretty dysfunctional. that's right.
Julie, I wanted to touch a little bit on how you use your social media platform, because this is how I think lots of us, if we're not buying your beautiful herbs, we're following you on Instagram and the stuff that you share, the images of birthing women that you share, the experiences that you share around the experience of being a woman, of breastfeeding and menstruating. And that led to your account being deleted for a while, talking about structures of power. And now, even now, there are like restrictions placed on your account. I just wanted you to reflect on why it's so important to you, even despite all of that, to continue sharing images and stories of what it is to be a woman and the lived experience of being a woman. Why is that so important to you to bring those images and stories to women and families?
Yeah, I have this ongoing dispute with both Facebook and Instagram where I keep incurring penalties for posting content that is against community standards. Mm. And I am a flea in their ear because I'm just saying, well, you have a double standard there. You actually got a problem with hypocrisy because you're allowing this plethora, you're allowing us as women who are engaging with your product to be constantly surrounded by porn and violence and hate speech and misogyny on every side, and yet you're treating us as if we're the terrorists. Mm-hmm. And this is not okay. And I actually think that you really need to look at your institutional misogyny. You know, because that is a thing. You know, we're aware of the issue of institutional racism, but there's a bias there that can actually be institutional misogyny. So when I talk to these guys, they're all, you know, amazing young guys, and they're not sexist at all, not in the slightest. I'm like, I know you're not sexist. I'm trying to get you to understand institutional misogyny. Yeah. And we just, this is like, this conversation just keeps going around and around. They're completely unable to see it. And they're just saying, if you conform to the community standards, your accounts are not going to have a problem. Mm. And I'm saying, well, your problem is that your algorithms are made for male norms.
Yeah.
It's a bit like making seatbelts for the male norm. It actually doesn't serve women. So to you, breasts and vulvas and nipples and vaginas are against community standards, but they're our lived experience.
Yes.
They're our norm. So if you have an algorithm that identifies the site of a nipple as sexual content, for us, it's not. This is our lived, daily, real life experience. Mm. And then so I, you know, I try to talk to them about the importance of story, the importance of our stories mattering and being seen and heard, and how healing story is, and women being able to see themselves represented and to see their stories represented and shared is therapeutic and it's healing and it's important. So I still have a lot to say to Instagram and Facebook. But last night I was reading this book and I came across this quote. And it's by a poet called Adrienne Rich, and it's from her work on lies, secrets, and silence. So this is what our poet and philosopher Adrienne Rich has to say. Whatever is unnamed, undepicted in images, whatever is omitted from biography, censored in collections of letters, whatever is misnamed by something else or made difficult to come by, whatever is buried in the memory by the collapse of meaning under inadequate or lying language, this will become not merely unspoken, but unspeakable. And I was like, yeah, that's what's happening on social media.
Yeah. You need those Instagram guys to read Adrienne Rich.
Yeah. So when a woman can go on my Instagram account and many other accounts just like it, and they can see women breastfeeding openly without having to hide, without shame, when they can see a baby being born breech out of a woman's vagina, when they can see women using gravity and being upright in labor instead of lying on a bed, when they see a woman hatching her own baby in a birth pool and not having to be delivered off, when they see women being as loud and as noisy and as expressive as they so desire during childbirth, these things are not only providing fair representation, but they're actually healing stories for women. They actually are healing trauma for women. And this stuff is really important. And I've noticed down through history that women's her story has been co-opted and plagiarized and sometimes just deleted from the historical account. And I'm over that happening. You know, our stories are important, and our right to share them with one another for each other's mutual benefit and our collective wisdom, and so that this collective wisdom can be handed on to future generations, is critically important. So I'm not going to change what I share and what I talk about, because I want to be able to give other women the permission and the freedom to talk about sex and orgasm and breastfeeding and natural birth and relationships and sex after giving birth and mental health concerns and the need, you know, motherhood needs, all of these things. That these are our lived daily ordinary life experiences and they deserve a respectful forum as much as anything else that's out there in society. So Facebook and Instagram, you need to change your algorithms so that they suit female norms as well as male norms.
Exactly. Thank you, Julie, because what you were saying when you talked about, I've never really thought of it in this way before, but in terms of seeing ourselves represented, because I remember, you know, being a pregnant woman and I think the only representations of birth I'd ever seen were in movies, and I'd already at this stage chosen I was going to have a home birth, but I'd never seen a baby's head come through a perineum. I'd never seen that before. And it was really hard to imagine. Yeah. And it was through Instagram and through images of birth, real raw images of birth, that I saw that. Yeah. And I just remember looking at them in absolute fascination, like, what? Yeah. So that's how it, that's what it looks like. And it was quite confronting, not in a like, oh, this is offensive, but just in like, whoa, that, like, someone's body can do that. Wow, kind of thing. Like,
absolutely.
And, you know, and that changed my, it's not just telling stories, it's actually creating new stories, because my story might have been very different if I'd never seen that, you know, because I saw that, it allowed me to create a new story where I birthed my baby physiologically at home myself in the water and picked him up myself, you know, like that so created this story.
Yeah, and then that's a new story that can then be shared to inspire and encourage.
Yeah, and that's the ripple effect.
Other women to know what's possible. And specifically what you said about being able to see a stretching perineum so that you know on a deep level, my perineum will stretch. It can stretch. This is what my body can do. If, because of the algorithms, it's flagged as sexual content because of the presence of pubic hair. To me, that's just like so unacceptable.
It's absurd, isn't it?
It's so incredibly important for women's education and empowerment. And there's been huge parts of our lives and our lived reality that have been edited out and shut down. And it does cause women to feel insecure in the world. So this is like a reclaiming of our right to personal agency and the right to personal sovereignty in the world. You know, it's incredibly important stuff. It's not just a few photographs on Instagram, because as I said, this is part of our collective wisdom, not just our collective wisdom, but our collective confidence about who we are as people. And so this particular struggle gives me empathy for the struggle of other people who are marginalized for whatever reason, and their need for visibility and their need for representation and their need to have their stories validated as well.
Exactly. And as you're speaking, what's kind of coming up for me is the ability to define ourselves on our own terms, because when, you know, for example, as you just said, the algorithm picks up pubic hair and therefore that is tagged as sexual content. That's only, like, pubic hair is only associated with sexual content because it's seen through the male gaze. Like, no woman looking at a baby coming through a perineum will think of that as sexual content. You know, so, and this is why it's so important to be able to define ourselves on our own terms. And as you said, that's not just relevant to women, that's relevant to any marginalized group.
Yeah. Well said, Jessica. Here.
Oh, I'm loving this conversation, Julie. I knew I would. I wanted to ask you a little bit, before I ask you this question, Julie, is I wanted to ask you a little bit about your faith and your Christianity. Is that something you wanted to touch on, or we don't have to if
I
you don't
want to?
Oh, beautiful. Okay. Yeah, well, exactly. I'll go.
It kind of ties in with so much we've already discussed.
Yeah.
So It seems to me that birth works because love works.
Mm.
And so love is like the most important ingredient at birth. And there's a saying in the Bible, God is love. And my deepest understanding of who or what God is that one sentence, God is love.
Mm.
And there's also a verse in the Bible that says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out all fear.
Mm.
And so we, you know, we have this understanding in birth that, you know, there can be this fear, tension, pain cycle. And as doulas and midwives, we want to help reduce that mm-hmm. and stop that sort of like, it's a negative cycle, and then create a positive cycle. So with love and care and respect and patience, we can change that into a love relaxation, therefore manageable sensations cycle mm-hmm. instead of fear, tension, pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother used to say to me, 2/3 of pain is fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of resonated in my mind, and it helped me as I was going into childbirth. And I also found that just the natural hormones, my curiosity, remember I said before about curiosity,
mm-hmm.
when you're in labor, be curious. And that I became aware that my hormones were actually helping me to not feel afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And to not worry about the timing of things. And your hormones actually help you kind of get into a state of forgetfulness
mm.
Where time has no meaning. And that's actually really, really helpful in birth.
Yes. Yeah.
So the other thing with just like connection with God is, you know, I said before about how important reintegration and connection and authentic relationship is and how healing that is.
Mm.
And that's what we have with connection with God, so seeing God as our creator.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of culture and deep identity. So as a child of God, we're loved, accepted, and adopted. And that sense of real identity that, you know, you are loved and you matter and you're precious
mm-hmm.
and you're worthy provides a freedom for us to be our authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in the Christian faith, the Christian tradition, we have this this richness of the Word of God, the Bible, and a lot of the language in it is deeply symbolic. It's like an extended love letter, and it's poetic and it's rhythmical, especially certain like some of the books of the Old Testament, like the Psalms and Isaiah and some of those books. It's like the most amazing deep felt heartfelt poetry,
mm.
and it touches you in a really deep place. Just like all good art and poetry and music would do. And when we're meditating on that, like during times of intense challenge, such as childbirth, mm-hmm. It actually draws our focus away from ourselves and it gives us the most beautiful focal point. So a lot of times, you know, in birth coaching, they encourage women to have a focal point. And when that focal point is actually gazing upon Jesus or the loveliness, the holiness, the kindness of Jesus, it's just like, you're actually focusing on glory instead of this human struggle, this incredibly difficult situation. And glory we see as like this beautiful, loving presence. So mm-hmm. a sense of feeling really, really loved and protected. And that allows a really deep surrender because you feel that it is safe to surrender. Mm-hmm. And for this reason, I created the Ancient Gates Project, which is a resource especially for Christian women, but honestly for anybody. And it's 24 little blessing cards for childbirth and then 24 pieces of original music with me voicing some meditations that are weaving in and out of these words of ancient scripture. So one of them, that title is taken from, it says, "Lift up your heads, all you gates. Be lifted up, you ancient doors of destiny." And see, I would read that and I would go, oh, that's just like the cervix opening up.
Yeah,
and
wow.
And then it talks about the King of Glory is there to defend you and he's there to help you and he's the one that will fight the battle and help you in that situation. So there's the sense that he's this King of Glory. He is this loving, peaceful presence and there's no judgment. Mm-hmm. In that environment, there's no judgment and you can just relax and feel mm-hmm. safe and feel held. So what I found is working with birthing women is that some important work to do in the prenatal time is to deal with fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this other verse in the Bible that says, "I sought the Lord and he heard me. He really listened to me and he heard me. He understood me. Mm-hmm. And he delivered me from all of my fears. So the goal is not to have no fears, mm-hmm. but to be able to honestly own and voice your fears and feel like they're being validated and heard versus this experience of just being miserably paralyzed mm-hmm. by fear, like a deer in the headlights. And I was actually talking with a beautiful mother last night, and she was so honest and candid about how much birth is a full-on struggle for her. Mm-hmm. And she described a time that she says she feels like a very young child and in a very vulnerable place when she's giving birth, and she's really, really loud, and it takes ages, and she's, you know, really, really has to vocalize a lot. And she was saying, as long as my loving midwives were right with me and their hands were on me at all times, mm-hmm. I could get through it. And she knows herself really well now because she's had three children. She's done this three times, and she's had the same midwives each time. Mm. And so she knows herself. She knows that she's going to go to that really, really vulnerable place when she's in birth. She knows it's going to be incredibly hard. She knows she's going to be really, really loud. And as long as she has that tangible connection of love, she knows that she will be okay. Mm. And so this is the love fear sort of paradox.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, you know, courage is not having no fear, but it's feeling the fear and not in a sense, not feeling afraid of the fear and just taking the next step anyhow.
Yeah.
So I had three births with no fear. and then I actually, my fourth pregnancy, I lost as a miscarriage, and that was an incredibly deep experience. I'm actually quite thankful for that experience because of how much I learned from it and the incredible, the way that I encountered God in a really intimate way and felt that he truly cared about me was incredible during that. But then I came to give birth for the fourth time, and for the first time I actually was aware that I actually had fear. Mm. I was like, you've supported all of these births. You really do know birth inside and out. Why are you afraid now? And I kept trying to argue my way out of it. Well, that didn't work, because putting pressure or shame on yourself, you can't do it to other people. Well, guess what? You can't do it to yourself either.
Yeah.
And then finally I just sort of went to God and just said, I'm afraid, but I don't know why. And he kept sending messages to me, like all of these different people. They'd write me little cards or they'd send me texts and contact me. And again and again, this message just kept coming through. Do not fear. Do not fear. Do not fear. And finally, really close to labor, I just decided if there was something to fear, God would tell me, because he had done that. He'd actually given me a warning and a heads up on a previous occasion. So I knew that he would do that. But he's telling me this time, do not fear. So I'm just going to make up my mind that there's nothing to fear and just do it. Mm-hmm. Now, I had more pain with that birth and more struggle with that birth because I didn't conquer the fear. It didn't all just like magically just disappear just like that. But I reached a point in that labor where I realized the only way I was going to get through was to dive even deeper into the most absolute surrender that I've ever done. And you can actually see in the photos that that's what's happening. And this incredible worship music is playing all around me. And as he literally came out, the song that happened to be playing was Healing Rain is Falling Down. I'm going to cry now.
I cry too.
Healing Rain is Falling Down. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. And the singers were just singing this over and over again. Healing rain is falling down. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. And I felt like I was receiving a kiss from God. Mm. You know, I have huge respect for people who don't envisage God or conceive of God in quite this way. But for me, it's something really real and personal. And as a child who is very love resistant, as a child who was very troubled emotionally, to reach a point in my life where I know that I'm loved by God and that sense of gentle, kind, non-judgmental safety can wrap around me at any time is unbelievable for me. It's been incredibly transformative for me, experiencing that kindness, that divine kindness in the herbs and in my own births has given me the confidence that I can just be a vessel for that, to let that splash onto the people around about me as well, because I know it's a limitless resource.
Mm.
And a lot of the stress and the trauma that we see in the world around us right now is because of the sense that the resources are limited.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the resource of divine love is limitless. And that just gives me, you know, huge encouragement and actual courage. So that's, I feel like women's spirituality is so tied up with women's identity and women's culture. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly important that whatever a birthing person's spiritual needs are when they come to giving birth, it seems to me that birth is an incredibly spiritual time. Mm-hmm. I feel like because of the shift in the hormones and that, it actually draws you into a time of special spiritual awareness and connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's on purpose so that we can establish an environment of love and respect and safety around us as we give birth. So I encourage women to sort of go with that.
Yes.
And it's just like, you know, whatever a person's chosen cultural spirituality happens to be, it's really important that they feel that is acknowledged and accepted.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can resonate so much with what you're saying, and you brought me to tears. And that was absolutely my experience as well. I kind of grew up quite proudly calling myself an atheist. And it was actually only when I became pregnant that I feel like my eyes were opened to something much bigger than me in the world, and I was held by that and held by the divine, and yes, to be able to then surrender and have such trust and faith in the divine that I was held, and it's something that I'm still learning to kind of trust in now, even like not even in birth but in just general life, that I'm held.
And yeah, I feel the same. I feel like I'm only just barely learning and just barely tapping into that, because for me, as a traumatized child, you know, I've grown up my whole life where my defense mechanisms have been fear, stress, and anger.
Mm-hmm.
And those are incredibly toxic.
Yeah.
Defense mechanisms are dreadful ways of interfacing with the world. You know, you're on the defensive all the time. And the complete opposite of that has been just falling into the loving arms of God and letting him love me and letting him carry me and letting me cradle me as if I was just a little child. And there's a surrender with that. There's a really deep humility with that, abandoning all of my chosen, you know, coping mechanisms and stressy ways of being, and just letting him hold me. So I'm still learning, learning to do that.
Me too. And it's such, every time I remember, it's like such a relief, because it's actually so much, it's so heavy and hard to carry that around all the time, and when you can put it down and just trust, it's actually such a relief.
it really is. And I think just that awareness of something beyond ourselves and something bigger than ourselves and something greater than ourselves. And to me, I encounter that in Jesus. And I'm aware that other people may approach this mystery from a slightly different perspective, and I'm sort of cool with that. But when I really search my heart and go, what do I really think? What do I really believe? It all really just comes back to the person of who Jesus is and the way that I've discovered him in the Word of God, from the very, very Old Testament right through to the current time. And, you know, that's, I'm being quite sort of bold about saying that, because I'm very aware I have some good friends who are Muslims, and they watched their beautiful faith get kind of like hijacked by some extremists, and it really brought their faith into disrepute in a sense because of this extremism that sort of went off on a weird tangent. And that has actually happened in Christianity in the current time as well. And I know that my Muslim friends can really understand what I'm going through, because you know, error and extremism can occur in any faith or system of belief.
Mm.
You know, you can get puritanical about just anything, like even healthy eating or something mm-hmm. like that. And Christianity is no exception. And at this time, we do have fundamentalism and extremism that is sort of like warping Christianity into something that's completely unrecognizable. And so I've been very aware that for some people, the mention of Jesus, the mention of Christianity can actually be painful for them.
Mm.
It can be traumatic for them because of the dreadful experiences that they've had. And I'm so very, very sorry.
Mm.
But I also relate quite deeply because there's aspects of Christianity that I would run a mile from.
Mm-hmm.
But that's different to who Jesus really is.
Mm.
And that's where I'm drawn back to again and again.
Yeah. And to me, it's really exciting and refreshing and encouraging to hear you talk about that, because although I'm not a Christian, and probably because of those things that you kind of touched on and personal and family traumas, but to hear that kind of reclamation of the essence of Jesus and of Christianity from the perspective of a woman, you know, and a mother, like, to me, that is really powerful. It's when those voices are kept out of the conversation, which just goes back to what we were talking about before, that yeah. that the reality gets warped.
Yeah. And in so many ways, like, to really find out who is God and what is he, she like,
mm.
go and connect with nature
mm.
and let nature whisper to you. And that's so much of our work. And, you know, we encounter the reality of who God is and what he's like when we give birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of nature, including, you know, herbalism, is that for me. I hear the whispers of God and I feel the love of the divine in the things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me a sense of childlike wonderment.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me a sense of deep, deep peace. And it gives me a sense of, like, there is something here that is nothing to do with me, not the entire mm. world and all of creation hinges on me and my opinion and my mm. my soul perspective. And that gives me that outward view
mm-hmm.
And that curiosity to go, there is so much more going on here than beyond, that is so beyond anything I can comprehend.
Mm.
And it's beautiful.
Yes.
And it's wonderful. And I think it just is all summed up as a prayer that says, I want to know you, Lord. I want to know you more. And that's sort of like, yeah, where my heart is at.
Yeah. Oh, what an absolutely beautiful place to end the conversation, Julie. Thank you so much for your time. It's just, I've hung off every word out of your mouth, as I fully knew that I would, but it's just been such a pleasure to speak with you. Before we go, can you let the people listening know a little bit about how they can work with you in whatever capacity and how they can connect with you?
Yes, I would just encourage, if you Google Blissful Herbs, you'll find it all.
Mm-hmm.
So I have three places to contact me. Like, if you Google Blissful Herbs, you'll find my website and see what I offer there, and see how to contact me and how to have a consultation with me if you desire to. And then I have, you know, Instagram, which is just blissful.herbs. I'm on Facebook. I also have another blog called It Is For Freedom. And in that blog, I share my whole journey of coming out of Christian legalism and fundamentalism and finding a place of grace.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's conversations with other women who've had a really similar journey. And then I have another blog, which is just called Melbourne Doula at blogspot.com. And on that blog, I just wanted to have a place to curate all of my learnings. So there's free resources there. You don't need to pay anything. It's all there. Everything, pretty much everything I've ever learned about birth and birth choices is mm-hmm. on that blog. And I really, really wanted to just have a space where women could, all of the links are there. And it's, you know, it's a real sort of masterclass in just about everything you could possibly need to equip mm-hmm. yourself for safe birthing and knowing your birth choices. So that's melbournedoula@blogspot.com.
Beautiful. And I'll link to all of those things. Yeah, that's an amazing resource, that blog. As so is everything that you do. I want to thank you again for your work with herbs, because when I think of my early postpartum period especially, I smell the herbs that I would prepare yeah. to put in the bath. And like, just that, like, it's funny that you use the word blissful, because that's what it really conjures up for me. It was such a blissful, beautiful time, and the herbs were such an important part of that. So thank you, Julie, for your time and for your work in the world and everything that you are and do. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Jessica. It's been a real pleasure for me too, and I so appreciate you inviting me to come on and chat with you today.
Thanks so much, Julie.
Thanks for listening to the Wild Mother Podcast. I'm living and mothering on the unceded country of Dharawal people, and I gratefully acknowledge their ongoing work and the work of Indigenous people everywhere in the service of thriving life on Earth. Stay wild, mamas. Hey.